Welcome to this episode of the Mycotoxin and Chronic Illness Summit. Today, I am so honored to have Dr. Jill Krista with us. Dr. Krista is a naturopathic doctor, best-selling author, and internationally recognized educator on neuroinflammatory conditions such as mold, Lyme, pandas and pans, and post-concussion syndrome. She's passionate about helping people recover their health after exposure to toxic mold. Dr. Krista is the author of Break the Mold, 5 Tools to Conquer Mold and Take Back Your Health, and supports mold sick people through her Inspire membership. She also provides online training for medical practitioners wanting to become mold literate. Welcome, Dr. Jill.
Thank
Such
you.
Such an honor to have you.
Oh my gosh, what a treat. Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here. Yeah. So many people affected by mold have histamine issues. Can herbs help people with this?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think herbs are uniquely qualified to help people with mold-related illness because it's one of those that with mold, you're dealing with allergy, you're dealing with toxin, and you're dealing with the whole immune reaction and inflammation. And herbs have these multiple mechanisms of action. So they can address, you know, one single herb can address many of those things at one time. So one of the herbs that I love to use for histamine issues is nettles. Mm-hmm. And nettles don't get a lot of press. You know, they're seen as a weed. They're a little bit of a noxious weed because they hurt when you're trying to clean them up. You know, they're called stinging nettles for a reason. In my area where I live, and I know that in a lot of the United States, nettles come up in the springtime right when we have allergy and histamine issues. So it's almost like Mother Nature is saying, hey, you're having problems with pollen? Here's a remedy for you. And so you can take nettles as a food. They're safe enough. They do have a sting to them when they're raw. So I have a couple of videos where I show people you can make them, you can add them to cooking, just like any green, wearing gloves. You can make tea out of it. You can drink the tea. You can take them as capsules. You can do all kinds of things with nettles, and it helps to reduce your histamine by being a multi-mechanism kind of a plant. It's very high in quercetin. And quercetin is one of the things we know that can calm down histamine. And it has tons of nutrients, trace minerals, all of those things. So yeah, that's one of my favorites.
I love that the first one you bring up is one to help with histamine and mast cells, because that's usually where I start with my treatment in not only tick-borne illness, but also mycotoxin and mold illness, that we need to calm down the mast cells first before detoxifying, before killing the infections. Yeah. What other herbs do you like to use for mast cell issues?
For mast cell? Oh my goodness. Things that are high in bioflavonoid. So things that are, the bioflavonoids are the colorful pigment in fruits and vegetables. And there's pretty much for mold-related illness, that every spectrum that exists on the rainbow does something unique for mold-related illness. So, you know, it's one of those things where if you can pick a color, any color, if it's a colorful plant, you are likely getting some relief there. I don't know about you, but a lot of my histamine-sensitive people have very irritable respiratory passages, irritable bladder, things like that. And there's a plant called mullein, and that one is just like, it's like a lamb's ear if you see it growing. It's so soft, and it has a lot of mucilaginous properties, which means it's mucousy and goopy. And it does a nice job of coating those irritated respiratory passages, irritated bladder, irritated gut lining. So quite often I'm combining nettles with that, with mullein.
I love that. I do see my patients with a lot of interstitial cystitis and respiratory issues.
Yeah.
So always working to calm down those systems.
Yep. Yeah. That and marshmallow. That's another one. Depending on if the person has SIBO or not, then it gets, you know, I might not be able to use marshmallow, but I just love it. People don't think about the soothing part. You know, that they really, it's always like targeting the histamine. You got to lower the histamine. Well, nettles does a very efficient job of that. It's a super healthy plant. It's a safe plant because people eat it as food. That's why we think, okay, wow, I can go really high dose with this. So that's doing a fantastic job of lowering the histamine. But now what about all the other stuff? You know, the soothing part is really important. Yeah. I also love hawthorn. Because of that high bioflavonoid, if anyone sees hawthorn, it's a deep, deep, deep red. And it has an affinity for the chest and the heart. And yes. So many of my patients are dealing with asthma, or especially post-COVID, you know, we're dealing with a lot of, you know, glass lungs and these kinds of things. And hawthorn just goes right to that area and opens it back up again. It helps the heart nourish itself first. I think of hawthorn as like the oxygen mask plant, you know, it's like, put your oxygen mask on yourself before you put it on someone else. It's the same thing for the heart. It's nourishing and feeding the heart itself. And then the heart can nourish and feed the rest of the body. So those are kind of my triple threat. You know, I think histamine, I think heart and chest opening, and I think with those mucilaginous plants.
Very nice. I think of those same things, and I'll use slightly different methods, but similar. So for the lungs, we'll nebulize glutathione a lot for the lungs. For the IC, I have a kidney tonic where I have a bunch of herbs that I'll use. Sometimes I'll give people a Frankenhauser injection.
Wow.
Yeah. I love talking to you because it's new perspectives and new ideas to bridge together.
Yeah. Well, we have so many tools, you know, we have so many tools at our disposal. And I was just thinking it'd be fun to talk about mold and mycotoxins from an herbal standpoint, since, you know, we're two naturopathic doctors. We can do, if those measures aren't working, or in addition to those measures, that's the nice thing about these plants, that so many of them that I just mentioned, they're very safe and you can combine them with other measures. It's not an idea of like a one thing. And if that's not completely taken care of it, we have to withdraw it to add this other thing. That's not how natural medicine works. Often many legs of a stool makes a more solid foundation.
Yeah. And I find that the herbs allow for the other therapies.
Yeah. It's almost like they give it instructions.
Exactly.
Like the herbs have an instruction manual.
They do. They do. Their foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I understand you have a different approach to binders. Tell us about that.
Yes. So, you know, as a naturopathic doctor trained by Dr. Walter Crinian, the late, great Dr. Walter Crinian, I didn't learn that binders were a number one therapy. And, you know, like a Shoemaker approach is a little bit different approach than how I was trained. And I actually didn't really know about the Shoemaker approach until I started doing my ILADS training to become an ILADS physician. And then Dr. Nathan was presenting because Dr. Shoemaker couldn't be there at one of the meetings. And everyone is talking about the Shoemaker protocol and binders and binders. And I'm thinking, what? I don't understand even what that is. And it didn't really make sense to me to only do a binder and not take care of the fungal overgrowth that I see, or colonization, and those kind of things. So so part of the training that from Dr. Crinian is detoxification. So I was using insoluble fiber as a mycotoxin detoxer, and other fat soluble things, you know, BPA and all of those things that you can get out with getting rid of the bile and trying to capture it. And for anyone listening, we are very, very good recyclers of bile. That's a handy thing when you live in a place where it's cold in the winter and you can't expose a lot of skin to the sun. It helps you preserve your vitamin D that you gained in the summertime. It helps you preserve vitamin A. It helps us preserve these fat soluble nutrients, but that is inconvenient when you have a fat soluble toxin. So the idea of a binder is that we're grabbing that bile so we don't recycle as much of it. And then the body has to make new, fresh, clean, non-toxic bile. It's the idea. And over time you dilute. Like Dr. Crinian had taught us, the solution to pollution is dilution. So I
love it.
It just makes sense, you know, and if you're dealing with a fat soluble toxin, then you need a ton of good fats and you need to make new clean bile. And that's where binders come in. But if you're using insoluble fiber, which is what they see in studies of people with cholecystectomies, where they're having bile dump diarrhea and like bile is a problem. There are studies, it has nothing to do with mold and mycotoxin, that say, okay, insoluble fiber is one of the best binders of this stuff. And it helps reduce bile dump diarrhea. So I took that research into the mold mycotoxin world and was like, well, then insoluble fiber needs to be the way to go. And so that's like psyllium husk. It's old fashioned, but it works really well.
It works. It does.
I know. Flaxseed, chia seed, rice bran, those kinds of things bind bile very effectively. and they nourish your microbiome. Whereas if you're giving a drug like cholestyramine, it's binding very effectively, but it also could be depleting you of necessary nutrients to make more bile. So, you know, that's just a very different approach. And since getting into mold and mycotoxins, I started doing research on, you know, I wonder if there's other ways and other things that bind. And I found a study with kale, mustard greens, and collard greens that showed that they are very good, if they're steamed, very good binders of bile. And about like 20%. Great. I know. And they're feeding us, you know, it's nourishing you and it's detoxifying you. So not only from the sulforaphane, liver, that side, but also that they're binding the bile and helping you get this stuff out of your body. It's just,
that's fantastic. Great information. I don't think I didn't know that information. I don't think that's,
I mean, that's the thing. Like, you do a deep dive into something and I just sit there on PubMed, you know, I wonder if, I have patients who say, I swear by my broccoli sprouts. If I don't eat my broccoli sprouts, I have headaches the next day. And I'm like, you know, what exactly is going on there? And so of course, detoxification, but also bile binding and also aloe, which we have to use. We talked about the soothing for patients who have, you know, if they have histamine issues, a lot of people have reflux and they have acid issues.
They do. Yeah.
And so if you can use aloe to take care of that, is also an immune modulator. So it helps boost up the immune deficiency that mycotoxins can cause and mold spores. And then you also combine the toxin. Wow. You know, now we have plant medicine doing what it does. So
I love it. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a very different approach to binders.
It is. It's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. But I don't use binders with people if they're constipated. So my little thing is no binders if you're bound up.
Nope, me too.
Then we need to be using binders. You know, we need to get the pre-binders on board so that they can.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What pre-binders do you use?
So my term for pre-binders is it's a term I made up just to kind of explain it to patients to say, okay, there are prebiotics and probiotics. There are binders and we also have pre-binders. And that means things.
I call it pre-tox. Instead of detox.
I call it a pre-tox. That's
probably similar to what you're about to talk about.
Yeah. I think we're probably having a mind meld here.
I think so.
Well, I mean, we're similarly trained. It makes a lot of sense. So yeah, things that help move and make bile. Mm-hmm. And that those are, you know, plants like gentian, dandelion, anything that has that bitter taste. If you can get a little bit of bitter on the back of your tongue, that starts up the whole digestive process. Well, really what starts it is spit. I say detox starts with spit. That's kind of one of my,
that makes sense.
Mixing your food and tasting your food. It's the tasting of food that tells the brain what to send down to the digestion, what fluids to send down. Cause it's assessing, you know, it's sampling and assessing and saying, okay, there's protein here, there's fat here, there's, you know, all these things. Now the brain says, okay, digestive juices, we need a little of this squished in and a little more of that squished in. Well, if you're like most Americans, high anxiety, not slowing down to eat, not making your food, not smelling your food before you eat, that part doesn't get turned on. And so now the food enters without any information. And the next thing that's supposed to get turned on is bile flow. And so that just adding that little bit of bitters on the tongue before you eat gets the next step taken care of. And so that's an easy, like gentle pre-binder, but some people need a lot more thump, especially if they're constipated.
Yeah. And a lot of those bitters help support the liver and the kidneys. So it's like, you're doing all of this at once.
Yeah. We have bitter taste receptors in the craziest places. Like the taste of bitter is supposed to be a warning sign to the body that poison is coming. And so what it does, like we've been trained in the term alterative, which means you take something every day and it alters the body toward health and toward homeostasis in a gentle way. So it's not like detox and herks, you know, this whole thing. It's just like alterative. It's just sort of smoothing it out. And that bitter taste tells the body, there might be a little toxicity or poison coming in with this food or with this supplement that you're taking. We better make more secretions. We better make more things, get more movement and flow. And so they're perfect for detoxification because they're encouraging flow. So cool.
I know, right?
This medicine of ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anything else to use in particular as a pre-binder?
Sometimes people need ox bile. Some people actually, they just don't make enough of their own, or it's too sludgy. And so they need a little bit of help. Yeah. But I tend to have, if people are really bitter super tasters, we're all a little different in how we taste bitter. Some people can take 2 tablespoons of it, you know, on their tongue and they're just like, yeah, whatever. And some people a tiny little drop and it sticks with them for like 5 to 10 minutes. Right. So I just kind of see, you know, how the person handles a little bit of bitter on their tongue in our office. And then if they're like, ooh, no way am I going to take that, then I will give them a capsule of something that has some bitters in it. Like Gaia Herbs makes one called Liver Health I really love. And so sometimes then what we do is we drop a little bit of powdered gentian or something like that in the bottle and they shake it up. And then every time they take it, they get a little taste of bitter, but it's not to the degree that, you know, they will avoid taking their supplement. And then we get the bitter taken care of. Yeah.
Nice. Very nice.
Sneaking it in there.
And then what do you think of the use of antifungals?
I am a big fan. Yeah. And it sounds like you as well. I think, you know, when someone's exposed to a water damage building, they're exposed to these respirable and inspirable toxins. And the first place they hit is here, you know, when we breathe in the sinus mucosa. And the message with those mycotoxins is mold wants to come move in. Because that's what mold is doing. When it's spitting out a mycotoxin, it's doing it defensively to try to kill other living things around it.
Yeah.
If you think about the intention, just, you know, not all the biochemistry and all that, but just hovering above it and looking at what's the intention of this toxin. The intention is harm. And your flora hears that. It understands that intention. So your own flora starts to act defensively. And now you went from a peaceful commensal microbiome happening in the sinuses and the gut to a defensive, frightened, endotoxin kind of situation. And that's, then mold says, sweet, now I can move in because now they're infighting and mold spores can just go hang out there. And that's been my experience.
Me too. I find so much colonization in people's sinuses.
Yes.
Different molds, yeast, biofilm, bacteria. And then of course that can cross the blood brain barrier.
I know that's
the mycotoxins do.
Yeah.
And then once I clear that up, they really turn a corner because it's making a change to their HPA and absolutely, even the vagus nerve.
Yeah.
It's decreasing brain fog. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And oftentimes I'm going to treat the sinuses even before I treat the gut. Usually at the same time.
Yeah.
I find sinuses are a big overlooked area of inflammation. Think of how close that is to the brain.
Absolutely. And that's the part, you know, I kind of get a little flack for using antifungals in the nose. And I just think about the olfactory bulb is one of the 4 locations in our brain that doesn't have a blood-brain barrier.
Right.
So those toxins, which can move by osmosis cell to cell, they don't need a carrier protein. They just bloop into the cell membrane, and then they can migrate through any cell that it wants to. And it's a concentration gradient. So the more you're smelling in, so the longer you're in that water damage building, the more toxins are bumping, because they're trying to find the place where there isn't many toxins. It's just a chemistry thing. And so if you have that happening in your olfactory bulb, of course you're going to have intrusion into the brain tissue. And we see this with our patients that you start to treat the sinuses and it's just like, they can sleep again. Their anxiety goes down, you know, just all kinds of things. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of antifungals. I understand why conventionally trained doctors are very wary of that because their only tool is pharmaceuticals. And those have risk factors. They have resistance factors. So I feel so privileged as a naturopathic doctor because my toolbox is ginormous and I can start with little things, you know, like a little holy basil tea, a little infusing essential oils in your room until you're ready to get actually to treating the nose, you know, so we take baby steps and work people into getting them ready for antifungals. And people perceive when I say that, they're like, well, then they're not as strong. And we see that time, like thymus vulgaris, is has almost the same efficacy as amphotericin B against.
I love it.
Isn't that amazing? Against it's aspergillus. Amazing. It's like, just because they're gentle on the person doesn't mean they're gentle on the target, you know?
Right. So. Exactly. That's what I love about naturopath. You have to excuse my family upstairs turning on an alarm, but
life in COVID, right?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I love our toolbox, you know, and it really means that we can, whoa, guys.
Yeah.
Well, I'm here. Just one sec. As naturopathic doctors, we have such a big toolbox, and it's talking to you. It's like reminding me of what I take for granted, right? Like we just have these tools. We use them every day, all the time. And
and how lucky we are.
We're so lucky.
I know. And I always tell my patients when they leave, if this isn't working, I have a couple things lined up in my mind that we can do instead. So keep the communication going, because I do have so many different things that maybe it's homeopathy that they need. Maybe it's drugs. You know, some people who are really, really burdened, especially, I don't know if you're seeing a lot of Bartonella also kind of in this picture.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
A lot.
Some people really need to get on the antibiotics, and then that gets the burden down, and then we have something to work with, you know? So the idea that as a naturopathic doctor, I have things that are, you know, only wimpy or whatever. It's like, no, we know how to mix it all.
Exactly. Yeah. I do use a combination of drugs and herbs and peptides and all of it together. And some people need more at one time and less at another. And I just tell them, you're moving target. So I'm monitoring you. I'm watching you like a hawk. And as you're moving, I'm following you, and we're shifting, you know?
Yeah. That's a cool term. Like, so they know that things are going to change as they get better.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah,
they're always changing, and we have tools. Mm-hmm. We're lucky. Our patients, the patients who see naturopathic doctors, are blessed in that way, because there's so many options. I also tell them, I'm not going to reach for the top shelf right now. Like if someone needs hormone therapy, I'm not usually rushing to bioidentical. That's the top shelf. And I want to start with herbs, because you're going to respond to that first.
Yeah.
And then at some point we might need to use bioidentical, but if I go there first, then what happens when you really need that? I have nowhere else to go. So,
right.
So we have tools at varying levels, varying degrees, which I think is very powerful.
And every step then that they took further nourishes and sets the stage for those bioidenticals to do their best work at the lowest.
Exactly. Level.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They need lower dosages. And
I love hormones though. Because when someone needs them and you do, and they have done all the homework, it's amazing how just plunking in a little testosterone or a little. Wow. Now the system really works.
Changes their lives. Big game changer, especially if we have supported the rest of their systems. Yes. And it's really a simple thing for them.
Yeah.
So I've read that you say to avoid mushrooms. Are you 100% against the use of medicinal mushrooms?
Yeah, I get this question a lot, because in my book, I say the part of the diet that I recommend, which for the record, everybody, that is a therapeutic diet in the beginning stages of treatment. And then later in my book, I talk about how to reintroduce foods. So during the beginning, I do have people go off of all fungal things. So mushrooms, yeasts, all of those things, because again, we're thinking about the message in the toxin is fungus wants to come move into my body. For a temporary period of time, I have people try to get rid of things that might reinforce that message. And I just learned this from my patients. I didn't used to tell people to go off fungal things. We found out it was mold. But I would have patients come in and say, oh my gosh, my urinary frequency is terrible. I can't sleep. I can't, you know, these kind of things. And we, through diet diaries, through doing the grind of looking at a diet diary, I was able to identify that it was like, wow, seems to be whenever you have mushrooms, then you have like a bad 3 days afterwards, and making that connection. So that includes supplements like medicinal mushrooms, even though they're fantastic for immune modulation. Mm-hmm. For the selection bias of my patient base, they were aggravating things. So like the reishi coffee and all these things that are supposed to be so good for you.
Right.
Kombucha and all of that was actually causing fatigue and aggravations in my patients. So in that very beginning stage, that first therapeutic diet, therapeutic time, until we can get them solidly on antifungals and things are rolling and we get them on biofilm busters, once we get to that stage, which is kind of later in the, in my approach.
Mine too.
I don't want to poke the bear. We've seen some crazy stuff, parasites, and you know, we've seen some things happen with patients that they just, if we went too early, their bodies weren't ready for. And I don't like to make my patients do that.
Me too. I think that timing is crucial. Mm-hmm. Starting very gently, and each patient is different. Which door do I enter through?
Absolutely. Yeah.
For who's sitting in front of me. Mm-hmm. And some people can go at a slow pace, at a fast pace. Some people need a slow pace. They need a multi-pronged protocol, and or they need to go between protocols. Mm-hmm. For instance, if somebody has SIBO and they also have mycotoxin illness, I might rotate between the two. A lot of them have gut issues, and I don't want to be, of course, binding, like we talked about earlier, when they're constipated, but they have so many gut issues, it could take a year to treat them because they have H. pylori, SIBO, and parasites. And, you know, deciding where to start. They've also got a sinus issue and mycotoxin illness and tick-borne illness. So it's really like putting that jigsaw, that jigsaw puzzle together for each patient.
And that's really the art of practice. You know, the danger in writing a book is that I had to write the book for the bell curve, you know, people that fit the like classic mold, you know, not a lot of complexity, that kind of thing. And put in things that people could do safely on their own.
Right.
Very different than being in practice. When you're sitting there with somebody who Wayne Anderson taught me, Dr. Wayne Anderson, that it
is. You know, he's at our clinic.
Yes.
Yeah.
He came and he spoke. Yeah. He came all the way to Wisconsin. He spoke at one of our regional naturopathic conferences.
Oh, wow.
And it was one of those that just like, you know, opened up all of this big thought, you know, part of my practice. And one of the things that he had said in the thing is, it's not about which came first. You know, well, did you have Lyme as a child? And then it's about what's presenting right now. And that's going to be, I love that you said moving target, because that's totally a moving target. As you vitalize one thing, or as you peel a layer, there are the next things that come up. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You peel a layer off and another one comes bubbling up, and we don't know which one it is. But once we resolve one infection, another one presents.
Right,
which is why I have detoxification and mast cell treatment going on constantly patients, because we're healing more infections, there's going to be more aggravation of mast cells from byproducts of dying cells and dying infections, and the infections are dumping biotoxins, so constantly detoxing and using mast cells so we kill and they're a moving target.
I mean, the immune deficiency isn't just about infections, the increased risk of infections. Our immune system is our garbage cleanup crew.
Right.
And so if that's not happening, there's all this triggering material in the intracellular or the extracellular space between the cells, you know, and that's that doesn't get a lot of press. That's why I teach people about like peloid therapy, getting in mud baths, about lymphatic massage, about all of these things that don't have to do with something putting in your mouth. That's to do with moving all of that gunk so that your body doesn't have to get triggered continuously.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Sauna, coffee enemas.
Yeah.
My patients end up loving them. At first they're like, you're asking me to do that?
Yeah.
Why you do that? But then they say it relieves my headaches. Even it just, I feel energized. You know,
Yeah, I know. We do ask our patients to do some crazy things. They're the hardest working patients ever.
They are. They're an inspiration, these patients, truly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dr. Jill. Is there anything else?
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Is there anything else you want to share with them? Anything you want to part with? Tell us about your book a little bit more.
Well, I have a little quiz online. If people are, you know, you're listening to this summit and you're thinking, oh man, I totally have mold. You can go to the quiz or you can get my clinical questionnaire if you're a provider listening. And I guess just a reminder to people to trust yourself. You know, when you're going through this process, your doctor is doing the best they can to be your body language translator. But we're still human and we only know the tools that we know. And, you know, if you are not feeling like it's in alignment with you, trust that because there's something really there.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.